evening and welcome to From the Frontline, our weekly podcast. My name is Lenora Hammond. I have in studio with me here Peter Hammond, and we are going to discuss things that we can trust in general. As a Christian, trust is one of the most fundamental things that we need to be sure about. Can we trust our family? Can we trust our spouses? Can we trust our friends? So today, let's have a look at whether or not we can trust the government. Peter, what do you think about that?
Well, there is no doubt the Bible teaches the total depravity of man. And this is the very reason why the Bible advocates separation of powers. Just the scripture, for the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king, he will save us. That's from Isaiah 33, verse 22. That inspired the separation of powers in countries affected by the Protestant Reformation. The fact that God revealed his government in these terms, the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king, he will save us. This is teaching not only the depravity of man and the holiness and sovereignty of God, but there are three levels of government that God reveals: the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive. And so you can see in history, in the Bible, how God separated out in checks and balances in, for example, the nation of Israel, that there was a judiciary separate from the executive, separate from the legislature. And the legislature was also split into two, an upper house and a lower house. The upper house was traditional leaders, whereas the lower house was directly elected by the people. And so you can see how this is shown particularly in Western countries that have been affected by the Reformation, that you will have the executive, which is either a king or prince or prime minister or president, and an upper and lower house of lawmaking, which is like the House of Lords and the House of Commons. In the case of Britain or in America, you've got the Senate as the upper house and then the Congress as the lower house. And even in our country, we can see how this has shown itself in how we've had a separation of capitals. So South Africa historically has had three capitals. The legislative capital is Cape Town with the parliament, and the union buildings in Pretoria is the executive capital, whereas the judicial capital is Bloemfontein with the High Court. So the Supreme Court is in our capital of the Orange Free State. So there we are, over 1,400 kilometers separating our three branches of government. And again, even in Cape Town, you've got the separation between what used to be called the Senate, now it's called the National Council of Provinces, and lower house, which is the House of Assembly. So the idea of the separation of powers is you cannot trust people. You need checks and balances, you need restrictions, and that's why there needs to be not only checks and balances in government and separation of powers, but there needs to be constitutional limitations. To use the word of Thomas Jefferson, a constitution which is acting as chains to restrain the government, to keep the government within bounds that it does not exceed its powers.
So it sounds all very complicated, but maybe you can just help our listeners understand what actually is the biblical role of government. Before we discuss whether or not we can trust government, what is actually the biblical role of government?
Well, that actually is fairly simple. If you go to the Bible, to Romans 13 and to 1 Peter 3, you see the biblical definition of government. Government is there for justice and defense and law and order. That's basically it. That's it. The government is there to be a protection to law-abiding, to protect life and property and contracts, and they are to protect the nation from external invaders and from internal criminals. So basically, if you think about it in terms of ministries, biblically you should have a ministry of justice, a ministry of police or law and order, and a ministry of defense. That's basically it. And you could squeeze out Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the fact that you could have some foreign ambassadors and so on. But of course, that's gone way out of all proportion. It's a real gravy train scene. But biblically, there's no mandate in the Bible to have Ministry of Youth and Culture, for goodness sakes, or even a minister of Finance, because you don't need the government to control the economy. You don't need the government to control education or health. In a healthy society, these things are not dealt with by national government. These things are dealt with by local communities, municipalities, churches, voluntary associations, and private citizens.
So it sounds to me like the less, if you will, leadership, top-heavy leadership, the freer the individual citizen actually is at the end of the day.
Without a shadow of a doubt. In fact, to quote America's founding father, George Washington, government is not reason, it is force. And force, like fire, makes a dangerous servant and a fearful master. Mm-hmm. So, just think of a fire. Some people like to have fires in the home, they have a fireplace, and the fireplace needs to be a restricted area, and there should be a grate or guard, metal guard in front to stop embers spitting out from the fire onto the carpet, which is often flammable. So you've got to be very careful that any fire in your house is in a bricked area, well secured, because you don't want that fire in the fireplace to get out of the fireplace. Mm-hmm. A fire in the fireplace can warm the house and roast marshmallows and things like that. But if the fire gets out, if it gets onto any of the upholstery, carpets or curtains, and curtains are notoriously flammable, most curtains are made of very flammable material, the entire house can be lost. And in the fire brigade, we learned that in 20 minutes, if all doors are open, any house or building of whatever size will be irredeemably destroyed in 20 minutes from a fire if all the doors are open. Now, of course, that's why you have doors shut. It slows Every door will slow down a fire, depending on how good the door is, but it could slow it down enormously. Also, if the windows are closed and there's not much oxygen, the fire can't breathe and therefore it can die out within that room. But the point about watertight compartments, whether you think of submarines, ships like the Titanic with watertight compartments, or whether you're thinking of checks and balances in government, the purpose is to limit damage. And the trouble is governments can be awfully damaging. Mm. And the history of the 20th century should have proved that. But a lot of people still trust in the government. And I think it was well put by Dr. Ben Carson. He's the author of Your Brain. He's the Don't Waste Your Brain. Mm. And this tremendous brain surgeon. And he's part of American cabinet right now under President Trump. He looks after housing development. Well, Dr. Ben Carson said, it is interesting how we've been conditioned to think that politicians are the solution to our problems, when historically, the politicians have caused our problems. Mm. And which is one reason why he thought it was good for a medical doctor and for a businessman and other people who are not professional politicians to go in to fix the mess that politicians, professional politicians, have made. And yes, you can see here, a lot of people have this idea of government's a solution. In fact, here you can see the difference between a humanist and a Christian, meaning some of the biblical worldview. I'm afraid a lot of Christians are Christian in their hearts, but humanist in their minds. Because if you read more secular books than Christian books, if you watch the TV more than worship Christ, if we take in secular sources more than scriptural sources, then our hearts might be Christian, but our minds become increasingly more humanist. Mm. Practically atheist in some cases. And so when you look at the problems and you think, how do we solve it? The humanist normally says there ought to be a law. Mm. The government must. And so on many cases, they believe whether it's to do with your children or whether it's just to do with the economy, the solution has to be government. As though some professional politicians or strangers in a faraway place care about your children more than you do and understand your children more than you do and know what's best for the education more than you do or understand your health needs or your economic needs better than you do. And it's interesting how secular humanists, who basically believe in the goodness of man, their solution to most problems is more government. Mm. But Christians with a biblical worldview have the opposite view, because we believe in the depravity of man. We know this from our own hearts and souls. We see it in our own children. We understand that you don't have to teach people to sin and be selfish. It's natural. What we need rather is the grace of God and regeneration and sanctification and the work of the Holy Spirit and Bible teaching and discipline and daily applying Lordship of Christ in all areas of life to overcome the innate selfishness and wickedness that is part of human nature. Mm. And so we don't think people are the solution. We don't think government is the solution. We certainly don't think big centralized government's the solution to anything. We think they're a problem to be restrained and restricted and limited in checks and balances, not something to put more and more power into their hands. And so the Christian solution often is, what can I do about this? what can we, meaning the community, the congregation, do about this? But the solution of secular humans is the government must. Mm. And so if they see, for example, a homeless person, they assume we need another government program or more taxes. Mm. Whereas a local congregation may adopt the person, help them support a ministry like the Ark or Cape Town City Mission or the Salvation Army and get involved through direct charity and counseling and investing and perhaps even getting the person into their home, inviting them to a meal. We've in many ways gotten involved in quite a few of the people in the streets. It never crosses my mind that the government's a solution to a problem in our neighborhood. We just saw this recently with planting trees and pylons or restoring the Rondebosch fountain. It was done by private initiative and private individuals, not by central government. Mm. So this, I think, is the big divide. A secular humanist says the government should, whereas a Bible-believing Christian generally wants to say, well, what can we do about it?
So really, the individual who refuses to be responsible and godly and look after his family and support his local congregation and his pastor, the more we lose sight of that and the more society in general loses sight of that, and it's more important to spend the weekend in your holiday home than to support your local congregation and your ministries there, the more we need government to command and rule us because we're not being responsible. So personal responsibility has been willingly handed over to big bureaucratic government, which then costs everybody so much more because they all need to be salaried and housed and they all need to drive their BMWs and they all need 20 bodyguards and they all need their overseas funds and
first
so forth.
First class airfares.
First class airfares, exactly. So, and so therefore, the more taxes, and because we now have to pay so many taxes, we now are busier than ever before, and now mom has to go to work as well. So no one really has time to serve in their local congregation and minister to the people on the streets and go out and evangelize the homeless and care for them and adopt them, because we're just too busy trying to earn a living, and the bulk of our living goes to taxes. And in the end, we rely on government, even as Christians, because we're just so busy we don't have time for what yes. communities and churches should actually be looking after.
So if you just go back into our history, you'll see, for example, let's take the pioneer fur trekkers. They didn't like the government. They thought the central government was causing grief and they didn't trust the government in Cape Town. And so they decided, with all the interference that was going on, they were being restricted in their ability to defend themselves from cattle raiders and people coming across the Kai and Fish rivers and burning their farmsteads and stealing their cattle and murdering their family members. And so they said, enough of this. We've had enough of the government. We don't want anything from you. We're getting in our ossovars in the wagons, and off they went, and they went to found their own quiet republics where they could mind their own business. And they didn't want any government for anything. They provided their own transport, their own education. They provided their own defense, their own everything. And obviously there would be help between communities and farmers would help one another, but everything from soap, candles, everything had to be made on the way. Your own shoes. Now, surely there was some specialization. Somebody might have had a gift in leatherwork and the other person in needlework. And before you know it, they're swapping and bartering. But nevertheless, basically, these communities cared for themselves, as was the pioneers who went to America, the Pilgrim Fathers and so on. And for centuries and millenniums, most people have been self-sufficient. You farm, you grow, you produce, or you barter with others who can provide you what. And this is how it worked for centuries. But in the 20th century, suddenly people have got an idea that I can get the government to overtax other people, to confiscate their earnings and give it to me for whatever I need, which includes apparently Ray-Bans and Gucci shoes and designer T-shirts and, of course, cell phone contracts and DSTV. And these are absolutely essential. I can't live without that, apparently, so they say. And you can have poverty-stricken people who have got smartphones, DSTV, and they regularly eating out with the fast foods and McDonald's and so on. But they need somebody else to cover their needs because Apparently, they can't get out and work. You could see the difference from moving from a primarily agricultural base where people are self-sufficient to where people are more and more urban, where they need someone else to either provide them with a job or with someone else's taxes so that they don't need to work. And this is so open to abuse that before you know it, you can have a situation such as in our country where half of the total population are economically inactive or unemployed. Mm. And that puts a tremendous strain on the few people now who are paying income tax and keeping. And of course, it cannot last for that long because the whole system will get milked. After a while, people begin to understand that if I work harder, I just get taxed more. Mm. So I'm going to work less hard. Mm. And on the other hand, the other person says, you know, I can make more out of just welfare than I can actually working hard with a lot less hassle, and I can sleep late and watch my favorite TV program. And so the whole system is open to gross abuse when you get government taking over the role of the family and the church and the local community. So the Christian response has always been less government. And one example would be Switzerland, where the situation is so decentralized that nobody even knows who the president of Switzerland is, unless you're really well placed, because the president of Switzerland changes every month just on a rotational basis because there's no power in the central government. He's just there to make speeches and shake hands and greet foreign dignitaries. The power's on the local canton and municipality and local citizen. Because, and the good thing about that is a country that's run by on a local decentralized level, they're not a threat to the neighbors. Switzerland doesn't invade anyone. Switzerland doesn't bomb anybody. Switzerland sends the Red Cross out and helps people who are involved in horrible wars in faraway places. But they don't do anything nasty to their neighbors. In fact, you get chocolates from them and things like that. So if you look at Switzerland as a model of decentralization, it's worked for 700 years. It's a good model. Why are we going for top-heavy, like Roman Empire, pharaohs of Egypt, Babylonian towers, mentality of centralization? Those models don't work. And we've just come out of a century, 20th century, which was catastrophic when you think of what they did in destroying so much, not just lives, but historic artifacts and buildings that had stood for 1,000 years with their citywide bombings. So central governments actually are a threat, not only to life and property, but to liberty. And it seems increasingly even to faith, because now we've got a situation where through the lockdown, governments were able to stop 3 billion people worldwide from gathering to worship on Easter Sunday and Good Friday and normal Sundays and enforce crippling economic burdens. This is where central government goes. Not that they advise you. We advise that you would want to take these and these precautions to protect yourself from a contagious disease, but we are compelling you. Mm. Even if you're living in Pofada and Calvinia and Trier Mossies, Doetverein, Bofuska, Skietfontein, you must adhere to the Wuhan lockdown model, whether you live in California or you live in the middle of the Karoo. And it doesn't make sense. One size doesn't fit all, certainly not in government. So, yes, here's the point. What is the biblical role of government and how big should government be? And are they our savior? Are we looking to government to solve all of our problems? Or are we seeing government in a biblical sense of they're just there to protect life and property and to defend the country from external attack? Mm. That's their job. Everything else should be decentralized. Mm.
And I think as Christian parents, probably the most dangerous thing that the government meddles in is the education of our children. Because once they start telling our children what history is and what English literature they should be reading and all these different things, then we lose even more control. And our children then grow up thinking, oh no, but this is what the government said, so it must be okay. And you get this generation after generation after generation, and then they start introducing stringent sex education curriculum, and they just begin to play parent, except that they don't love our children the way we do. And
well, I doubt if they love our children at all.
Well, not only that, but next thing we know, our children don't believe anything that we believe, and certainly nothing that our parents believed. So they ostracize our children from us in many ways. And I think that opens up children, frankly, to be useful idiots.
And to be abused, because so many of the children who go through this alienation from their parents and their church and the previous generation through the school's indoctrination programs where they are bombarded with a lot of things are just nonsense, gender confusion, trying to teach them that there's more than two genders, and some say there's 72 genders, don't know how they get that right, and where they come out with the most bizarre ideas, and a lot of what they call sex education is nothing other than pornography and perversion. And so all of the indoctrination and social engineering, in many ways, it's been described to me by a teacher that it seems that the state, politicians, are trying to abuse teachers to use the children of schools as guinea pigs in social engineering experiments. And when you look at these experiments, the results are bad. Because how many of these children, feeling so alienated, end up joining gangs because they feel like their parents don't understand them? And they get into gangs, and they get into drugs, and they get into crime, and they get into all kinds of harmful things. Many of these youngsters, especially in the Cape Flats and in the Cape, end up being killed. And one of the leading causes of death in the Cape Flats is homicide, murders by other youngsters in gangs, and then drug overdoses, and then vehicle accidents while under drugs or alcohol. So the fruit of this state education has been horrific, and it's catastrophic. What it's done to so many youngsters, the increase in suicides or suicidal thoughts amongst youngsters now is catastrophic. So somewhere along the line, people should look at the fruit and say, quite aside from the fact that it's unbiblical that the state's involved in education, quite aside from the fact that it's clumsy, top-heavy, super expensive, really wastes a lot of time and money. And if you look at the amount of money that goes to the Department of Education divided by number of students, it works out that they are taking 12 times more per student than if we were to educate them ourselves. It just shows that while people think state schools are cheaper, they're not, if you look at how much tax is going into them. They might require less from the parents directly, but they're getting it indirectly through even non-parents through the tax system. It doesn't work. But to think that you can ever trust any government with the moulding of the minds of the future voters, there's a conflict of interest here. Does the average government want critically thinking, well-educated youngsters who are going to question their actions and be able to do the mathematics, say, wait a minute, we pay so much in taxes, we get so little back in return, and if you just take the people in the Western Cape who have looked on a provincial level and said, we pay every year 650 billion rand in taxes, but only about 50 billion gets spent in the Western Cape, most of that misspent on corruption and other nonsense of the government, but we could reduce our taxes down to 8% of what they are now if we were independent. So if they do the maths and say, we're paying more than our fair share, why are we being overtaxed in our section when so little comes to us? If the Cape was independent, we could decrease our taxes right now to less than 8% of what is now. And if we improved our government, which we easily could do, we could bring our taxes down to much less than that. Now, does a government want people who can do maths and arithmetic and think and look at history and say, wait a minute, socialism's never worked. It's a catastrophe wherever it's been applied. As Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is sooner or later you run out of other people's money. Yeah. And as another politician said, that socialism could only work in heaven, where you don't need it, or in hell, where they already have it. Yeah. But if children are too well educated, maybe they won't like government policies. So it seems like there's a deliberate dumbing down of our children and distracting them with non-issues, such as gender confusion, instead of real issues that's going to help them to make a living and to be a constructive impact in their communities.
Now, I hope our listeners don't think that we are suggesting that there aren't some incredibly dedicated teachers out there and even some incredibly dedicated Christian teachers out there. And it seems to me that when you and I were growing up, certainly when our parents were growing up, the teachers were, the curriculum that was used was much more Christ-centered. And even if a child going to school didn't come from a Christian home, the child was exposed to Bible reading, a religious education, to hymn singing. There were rules, there was etiquette, there was behavior, and all of that stems from the Word of God. But the more you remove the ability for the teacher to choose the books that he or she would like to use to teach this or that particular subject or to get it across to his particular students for that particular year, which of course varies every year. One year you might have a class full of kids who are incredibly able to understand what you're teaching, and the next year you might have a group of children who just need extra input, and you as the teacher and you as the parenting body of the school should be able to make those decisions. So the less control they have, and then the less wisely the money is spent, therefore the more kids you've got to pack into the classroom, which ultimately ends up in crowd control. So really, parents who need to send their children to school and are for whatever reason not able to home educate them or put them in a small private Christian school, they need to have a careful look at the textbooks that come home, and they need to find the time to discuss what the children are learning in schools and to teach their children to be more critical of what is being forced upon them in through the textbooks, especially in history.
Yes, which is one of the reasons why we designed the Biblical Worldview Summit, is to help youngsters in a one-week crash course to understand worldviews, to understand the assumptions behind a whole lot of worldviews, and to be able to recognize, oh, yeah, that's secular humanism, that's egalitarianism, here we can see antinomianism, we understand where these things fit, how it affects us, and they can see, we know what the Bible teaches, economics, entertainment, government, crime, punishment, and justice, and so on. And they've got answers. They know what they believe, why they believe it, how to defend an argument, and how to negotiate the minefield that's out there in a lot of the textbooks. So it's important to understand we're in a world war of worldviews. And yes, you can't blame the teachers, who in many cases are products of the same education system, and they're doing the best they know how according to the tools they've been given. But all the same, our children, well, we want to protect them. We want to protect them from the worst. Not that they don't know what's going on in the world, but they know it from a biblical point of view, and they know it from a constructive point of view, and they know how to resist dangerous worldviews of destruction, such as those that have littered the 20th century with mass graves, the vast destruction caused by communism, socialism, atheism. They need to understand where all that's come from, because power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's been so well documented, books like Death by Government by Professor Rummel, Professor R.J. Rummel, of political science professor of University of Hawaii, has produced this doorstopper book in 500 pages of Death by Government. He documents how centralized government has been the biggest destruction in the 20th century, that the main threat to life and liberty has not been crime. It hasn't even been war. It's been governments, secular socialist governments, killing their own people in peacetime within their own boundaries in the 20th century. And most people would be shocked. And as Professor Rummel says, these nice political science definitions, such as government exists for welfare and cultural development, and he said, that's out of touch with reality. The reality of the 20th century has been governments have been the biggest threats to life, liberty, property, culture, and everything else. And it's important that you have your curriculum based in reality, not in some kind of ivory tower fiction out there. The Black Book of Communism documents what happens from the Soviets' own records, what communism has done when they gain control of a country. I had books like 1984 and Animal Farm, written by George Orwell, as setback books when I was at school. And those warned us about centralized government and the dangers of government, and very much so. So if we can know these resources, we won't put our faith in the government. And it's certainly, you cannot trust politicians to be licensing teachers or choosing who writes the textbooks or choosing what textbooks are used, because as my history teacher, Mr. Rhys Davies in Rhodesia, warned us, said, beware the victor's version. Wartime propaganda morphs into peacetime textbooks. Governments lie. He said, I can tell you that I'm a member of parliament. I remember being shocked and saying, why are you a teacher if you're a member of parliament? He said, we don't get paid to be a member of parliament. We need a real job too. Well, that was back in the 1970s when members of parliament didn't get paid in Rhodesia or South Africa. They had to be successful in their own areas, and they donated their time, as were town councillors. Town councillors were often people with their own businesses. And I remember meeting the mayor of Pines. He was a member of our church at Pines, and he had a business because he didn't get paid enough to survive on being the mayor of Pines. He needed a real job as well. And, that's just my lifetime that I've seen politics go from something you donated your time to for community service to a get-rich-quick scheme. When I went to school and a teacher went around, what do you want to be when you get big? Nobody said a politician. I want to be a farmer, want to be a soldier, want to be a policeman, want to be a game ranger. These were the things in my class. Nobody was talking about being a politician, an actor in Hollywood, or an athlete to become a superstar, because there was no money in it back then. In fact, the Olympics, when I was growing up, you had to be an amateur. You weren't allowed to be a professional in the Olympics. Boy, has that changed. And it's so in politics. Whereas politics used to be, like in Rhodesia, we had a farmer like Ian Smith as the prime minister. And, he was really concerned for his farm, and he always was a farmer. And he never left being a farmer while he was prime minister. But now you've got professional politicians, and as Dr. Ben Carson says, the politicians aren't the solution, they're the problem. Mm. And so amongst the things that I would suggest that we would do to bring government back within reasonable measures would be to go back to the idea that politicians should not be getting financial reimbursement beyond what a normal civil servant gets. So, for example, if you fixed members of parliament and cabinet ministers' salaries to roughly the same as that for teachers, policemen, nurses, and firemen. I mean, they civil servants who actually work a lot harder. Why should the members of parliament get higher than that? Well, one thing you'd do is you'd guarantee that policemen, nurses, and firemen, teachers would be paid better than all right now if you did that. But just to, and I think the idea of that you're getting all your benefits for the rest of your life and all these different fringe benefits for being a politician, it's attracting the very worst kind of people there. You want people who are like Rotary Club donating their time people. You don't want some gangster mentality of let's see how much I can loot and how much I can give to my fellow gangsters and cohorts and crime, more things that they can loot, like the $500 billion designed for COVID relief, which didn't really get to the people who needed it. This is the problem. If we can just bring government back within its restraints and stop looking to government for solutions of everything, and I believe the best solution to that is follow the Swiss model and decentralize everything and limit central government to defense, law and order and justice, and bring down to the lowest level all the important things and get government out of education. If education was in the hands of the local community and the parents, it would not only cost a lot less, but it would be far more children-friendly. It wouldn't be pumping this foreign agenda, which is hostile to our children's spiritual, moral well-being. Mm.
So can you give us some examples of what history does teach us about governments that can be trusted, or maybe some examples of where government couldn't be trusted and the people did trust?
Well, just as a youngster who loved reading books, I remember the first time my faith in government was shattered was 1973. I went to the Bulawayo Library and I came out with a book, and I was only 13 years old, but I came out with this book, The Last Secret. Well, it certainly wasn't The Last Secret, but the thought was then they had just unsealed, after 30 years being sealed, Operation Keelhaul. And here was this horrific story of how the Allies, our people, the British and Americans, had betrayed 3 million Russian and Ukrainian people, civilians, prisoners of war, refugees, many of whom had never even been born in Russia, into the hands of Stalin's NKVD. So here were these people, some of whom parents or grandparents had fled from the Soviet Union, the Bolshevik Revolution, 1917, had lived their whole lives now in Western Europe. But because of the Yalta Agreement, on the insistence of Stalin, Winston Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt treacherously, by secret order, betrayed 3 million Russians or their descendants in Western Europe into the hands of the Soviet Union. And they lied and they deceived and they disarmed these people. And they brutally beat, bayoneted, shot vast amounts of these Russian Ukrainians, forcing them across the river into the cattle cars, and the vast majority of which were killed by the NKVD on the other side, and the rest were consigned to a lifetime of slavery in the Arctic Gulag hellholes. And so reading this, and that was a shock. Next thing I came across was 1974. I remember coming across The Lusitania by Colin Simpson. And I'd always understood the Lusitania, one of the most important events in the 20th century. It led to America getting involved in the First World War. I thought I knew what happened. But these new files, which had been sealed for 60 years, when governments seal files for 60 years, it's not because there's something in there that's going to put them in a good light. And out it came that the British and American governments orchestrated the sinking of the Lusitania, didn't matter how many civilians died, in order to convince the American population, who didn't want to get involved in Europe's wars, to get involved in the wars. And Winston Churchill came up with the idea, First Lord Admiralty, and all the different conniving, lying, cheating, deceiving, to bring about the sinking of the Lusitania, you know, one of these false flag ops, in order to demonize the Germans and to bring the Americans into the war to break the stalemate. Well, that didn't help my confidence in thinking that what Hollywood was giving us was true. And then came across a whole lot of others. And in recent years, The Great Betrayal, written by Ian Smith, showing the treacherous betrayal of Western allies, particularly the British Foreign Office. As he said, we were never beaten by our enemies, we were betrayed by our friends. Freedom Betrayed, written by President Herbert Hoover, one of the greatest American presidents. He exposed the secret history of America's involvement in the Second World War and its aftermath, which is a shocking expose on Franklin Delano Roosevelt's treacherous communist activities in betraying hundreds of millions of Christians into the hands of the Soviet Union, saving Stalin's Soviet Union with the most treacherous activities. Well, this is not written by some conspiracy theorist. This is a 900-page, well-documented book written by an American president, Herbert Hoover, one of the most brilliant humanitarians of the 20th century, who saved the lives of millions with his campaigns of feeding the starving in Belgium and Germany and Finland during the First, Second World War and in between. So Herbert Hoover's expose on Franklin Delano Roosevelt's betrayal of freedom also, and that was suppressed for over 60 years. That was only released recently, even though Herbert Hoover died just as it was about to be released in the 1960s. And then his children and heirs were bullied, basically, by American government not to release the book, and the book was sealed for another 60 years. Do you know that, for example, the Polish people, when I went to Poland, learning about the Katyn Forest Massacre, they also told me how their prime minister of the government in exile, General Sikorsky, and his entire government, including his daughter, were murdered by the British and Americans in 1943, 4th of July 1943, in Gibraltar. Why? Because the Katyn Forest Massacre had been uncovered, and General Sikorsky was insisting on an independent investigation by the Red Cross of this. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt contacted Woodrow Wilson to get rid of Sikorsky and his entire government in exile. Now, Poland was meant to be Britain and America's ally. So was Russia. And to satisfy Stalin, the most brutal dictator of the 20th century, the Western allies connived to murder their Polish ally, on whose behalf they're meant to be at war to protect Poland. Of course, they ended up betraying the whole of Poland into the hands of the Soviet Union for over 40-odd years anyway. So when you get these details, if anybody ever thought you could trust governments, you just have to go through things like the Fearful Master, Agenda 2, is a range of things. In the Reformation Society, we often look at it, but you cannot trust governments. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Government is a fearful master. It's a dangerous servant, a fearful master. And so anybody who is living in Delusionville, thinking our solution is more government, if I can just elect this group, if we can just get this, and the promises. And right now, America is facing a election where one side is offering more government, almost total government, and the others restricting government. Well, to me, I would always vote for those who want to limit government. I'd never vote for those who want to increase the powers of government. Mm.
So if you're in conclusion now, if you're a young family starting off with raising your children and you feel like, well, who on earth can I trust? Then where do you begin? What should you start with? What resources can you recommend for them to have a look at to help make some decisions that will keep them free from an oppressive government?
Well, first of all, visit the christianlibertybooks.co.za website. Christian Liberty Books specializes in providing materials just for these reasons, including most of the materials are home education textbooks from all over the world. So christianlibertybooks.co.za is a good resource to get some good, great books. If you go on the Reformation Society website, you'll see a lot of lectures, presentations, PowerPoints, and audios that I've given on different issues like this. If you're wanting to know, you know, what's this about death by government and freedom by trade, and well, I'll give you the details, Katerin, and so on. It's so important that you understand the background. So people who want to know more about Rhodesia or about the Lusitania, I've done presentations, these, there's articles and often links to audios and videos and even PowerPoints too. So reformationsa.org website and christianlibertybooks.co.za are key. I would think the single most important thing we can do to protect our family from the deceit, which is throughout the world. And remember, the Bible's got many warnings. Do not be deceived. And warnings that Satan deceives the whole world and the whole world lies in the grip of the evil one. And at the end, God will send an angel who will bind Satan so that he might deceive the nations no more. So we know that nations are being deceived. So if we find ourselves in agreement with the United Nations or the World Council of Church or the World Health Organization or Time Magazine or BBC and so on, we've got to know we're being deceived, because the Bible warns us that Satan's deceiving the whole world. The only solution to this is we must become Bible readers. Let's read the whole Bible, study the whole Word of God, get back to the Word of God, read the Word of God systematically as a family, and also get education more out of the hands of the state and more back into the hands of the family. So as much as you can, introduce more education. Everything from arts, culture, history, economics, whatever the principles are, let's be sure that we're teaching at home, that our children aren't dependent on the government and certainly not Hollywood, which means we've got to be very selective in our viewing choices, and we must choose wisely, support alternative media, alternative news sources, alternative entertainment from these excellent groups like the Kendrick Brothers, or from, in our country, Franz Grenier, who are producing good Christian films. Let's support the good and let's boycott the bad.
And don't we have an upcoming camp soon for youngsters to be able to attend?
Yes, that's the Biblical Worldview Summit. So the first week of the new year, we normally have a Biblical Worldview Summit in Cape Town. It'll be from the 4th to the 11th of January. You can go on the frontlinemissionsa.org website. And on frontlinemissionsa.org, you'll see under events, Biblical Worldview Summit. There'll be video of last two or three of the camps and course we've done, be details, posters, and so on how you can get involved. And if you're interested in accessing some of the older audio and video, that's also on the Frontline website to see some of the presentations. But it's far more than the presentations and guest speakers. It's the discussion groups. It's the practicals. It's the lots of physical body, mind, and spirit. It's a lot of fun activities. But it's also great, important education, a lot of which takes place in discussion groups amongst the different ages, boys groups, girls groups, and discussion group leaders aimed at each age group. So our Biblical Worldview Summits are fun. In fact, our children have never missed any if they've been in the country. I think Andrea's the only one who's missed any, and that's because she's studying overseas. So we don't need to force our children. They always want to be part of it. They said it's one of the highlights of the year. So getting to a program like the Biblical Worldview Summit is helpful, very helpful intro. But also, if anyone's in Cape Town, they can join us for the Reformation Society on Thursday nights. And if you're out of Cape Town, well, you can get the audio and video links and try and keep track with what the Reformation Society is dealing with on a weekly basis.
John 8 verse 31 tells us that Jesus says, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We hope that you've enjoyed this today and that you can be challenged and that you can rethink some of the ruts or grooves that you might be in, and just challenge yourself to look at things slightly differently and to understand who you can trust and who you can't trust. God bless. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.